The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
You came!
Stay for the funeral.
Of course. What happened at the party, James?
He was out of his mind.
You left.
You told me to get the hell out of here.
You're so stupid.
Stop calling me stupid. I'm not bloody stupid.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington. And this is, if this sounds odd,
It is odd.
We are huddled around a microphone recording in person on one microphone.
For the first time.
For the first time ever.
Well, not the first time ever, but the first time this podcast
yes,
ever.
Right. Fair enough. The first time for this podcast. Yes.
We have been huddled around a mic before, and it has met with middling results, so.
It never goes well.
So, never goes well.
Fingers crossed. And we're here today talking about a movie by a fearless woman that we both know.
Yes.
Hope Dixon Leach, the writer and director of this movie, The Leveling, is a friend of mine from film school. And Aislinn knows her well. At least we worked on movies together.
You worked on movies with her.
Yeah. And with her on my movies, too, as I recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a while back, but I'd still call her a friend.
Yeah, good. I wish she's a friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
And in fact, sometime in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a show where we get to talk to her about this movie and about being a director. So stay tuned for that. Now we do our two bits.
Oh, it is very odd that I feel like I am looking over Tobin's shoulders at his notes in class, which I kind of am, but usually I have my own computer with my own notes. Tobin.
Yes.
Will you give us two bits of history about this film?
I would love to. So the first bit is that there are elements of this story, this script that Hope wrote, that trace their way back to classes I had with her in film school. It's like the DNA is there. So it's really neat for me to see how this story has evolved over time, or not even the story, because the story itself is different from what she had in now 10 years ago or however long it was. And that's something that I guess it's less of a bit, except that this has been something that she's in one way or another been working on for a long time. So I'm excited to hear her talk about that when we do get to talk to her about sort of the evolution of the story. The other bit is that while in film school, this relates to us, Aislinn, is that Hope spent a little time on the movie Palindromes, directed by Todd Solondz, as his assistant. And you and I have an affection for an early Todd Solondz movie called Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you.
Yes. Absolutely.
So Hope worked for Todd Solondz for a little while there, and those are my two bits. Not as much about this movie, and more about Hope and us, really.
It's probably good that you did not work on a Todd Solondz movie, because you would likely have been humming that or whistling that
yes.
inadvertently, yeah, pretty often.
Yes, and I don't know that would fit with that movie, with Palindromes, very well. But anyway, so yeah, Aislinn, why don't you tell us about the ladies in charge here? Now, since we're recording remotely, I don't have the ding. I'm going to put the ding in later. So there will be a ding. We'll just pause for the ding.
Okay, I will pause for the ding.
All right. Who we got?
Well, as we've mentioned, writer-director Hope Dixon Leach. Lead role played by Ellie Kendrick. Producers Rachel Roby and Anna Griffin. And director of photography, Nanu Siegel.
Yay!
Yay!
Yeah, good. Very good.
Tobin, for those...
What can I do for you?
For those who have not yet seen this film, and I hope that... hope. I hope that happens all the time.
It is so hard to write hope emails without using the word hope. Like, as we're saying, I hope you're doing well. I can't say that because
I bet it sounds different to her.
You know what I mean? We'll have to ask her about this too, but I have a vague memory of her objecting to it back when we were in film school.
Oh, okay.
So that's why it's always sort of stuck in my mind that I try not to use the word hope with hope. So anyway, as you were.
I was going to say, for those who have not yet watched this film, and I would encourage everybody to, we'll talk about it in a second, but in case you haven't gotten there yet, or it's been a long time, Tobin, would you just give us a very brief rundown?
Yes, this is the rundown from the Amazon streaming. This is their synopsis. Trainee veterinarian Clover Catto, Game of Thrones Ellie Kendrick, returns to her family farm in Somerset, England. It's not a joyous arrival. Her brother Harry has apparently committed suicide. Finding her home in a state of disrepair, Clover must confront her father Aubrey about the farm, the livestock, and the details surrounding Harry's death. So that's the movie.
It's a real feel-good romp.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I am not well-versed in Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. and we can get into why at another time.
Indeed.
But could you just give me an area or an anchor character that this person interacted with, or just how was this person involved in Game of Thrones?
She played a character whose name I do not remember, and that character and her brother in the show spirited Bran away from to go become the tree.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds great.
Yeah. Not involved in sort of
deep politics.
No. Nope. Sort of a side, sort of mythical great. Kind of tangent thing. Yeah.
That would be great. I loved her.
She's so good, isn't she?
She's so good. And the whole thing has a very, the whole film, there's an austere tone and quality to it. And she just, I think, fit right in and then also fueled that. Like, mm-hmm. We will find out more about their interaction and collaboration and that, but it just felt like she fit so beautifully in that world. And she was just heartbreaking at every turn.
As good as she was in Game of Thrones, to see her given a part as juicy as this, as meaty as this, was really fun to see, because, you know, you see somebody on a TV show and they come in to play their three scenes each episode, and you see kind of a sliver of what they can do. And to be given writing like this, the way she hovers on the edge of tears mm-hmm. for so much of the movie is...
Yeah, the jaw. She's got that jaw... crying jaw.
Yeah, yeah.
All out. I would prefer we say, instead of a meaty roll, a tofu-y roll.
Tofu-y roll, yes, of course. Yes.
She is a vegetarian.
Right.
And I do connect with her on that level.
Fair enough. Yes, good. A good tofu-y roll. Now, I watched you watch this movie.
And can I say, not the first time that has happened. I have had folks pay theater prices.
Uh-huh.
To take me to a film to watch me watch the film.
Uh-huh.
So how did you enjoy that experience?
Well, because how much did you know about... I enjoyed the experience a lot.
Good.
How much did you know about the movie going in?
Very little. I knew the paragraph, Tobin, that you just read to us out loud.
Uh-huh.
I knew that it was hope, and so it was going to be fearless and real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was it. But oh my goodness, animals, brothers, death.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie, and that's not a criticism.
No.
It's just a true fact.
Yeah.
I did write in my notes, mm-hmm. and then we are here on a family vacation, so there were people milling about, so a couple times we had to pause partway through. So at one of those pauses, I did take the opportunity to show it to him in my notes, in which it says, if this dog dies, I'm quitting the podcast.
Yes.
And again, not because the dog died per se, uh-huh. but because I had not been warned.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, and as I, and it was so funny, when I came past you that time and saw the look on your face, I thought, oh, I've got to tell her about the animals that do die. because I know that that's going to throw her if it comes sort of out of the blue. So,
exactly.
So.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, not the dog.
Not the dog.
The dog survives. So
spoiler alert.
dog lovers. Survives. An acute dog.
Amazing dog. I want to talk more about the dog with Hope.
We're going to have to talk to Hope about
all
the
animals I want to talk about. Because I have developed in my time in rural Oregon, I have developed an affection for large animal sanctuaries as well. So, next time, Hope, that you do a film with large animals, call a sister up. I would love to be a PA for a cow. That's all I'd say. Go ahead.
One of the things I love about this movie is the stillness. There's a lot of and silence. There are a lot of moments that happen without dialogue. It's a big section in the middle of the movie that has no words, where you see Clover as she's returning to this farm and kind of finding her way back into this life that she had run away from, and all through the movie, these moments where the movie's not afraid to slow down. And I don't mean that it's a slow movie. I mean I find it a brisk 83 minutes. I mean, it moves, you know, quite nicely, but that there is a stillness to this place that I think is really effective in this movie. Did you notice that?
Yes, I particularly with the silence, as you said, but then also the choices in terms of where to score it and where not to. Mm-hmm. That again, the word austerity comes to mind. That there, it's just sparse, which adds for me to the heaviness. Mm-hmm. And again, not a criticism. I feel like I'm using words that have connotations.
Yeah, no.
But you know, it's when we meet Clover. I want to call her Clove for a second, but that's Conquer Games. I feel like she's a sort of a rock falling.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's a soft landing at the bottom, but we're just kind of deeper in and harder to breathe, and there's just she's trying to figure out what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're getting ahead, but you said that, you know, a life she ran away from. I interpret it as a life she was chased away from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think she cut and ran.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was pushed out.
Yeah.
Even if it was inadvertently.
Or even if she had some part in, like if it's, I think there is some ambiguity as to why exactly she left. I think she's felt it's for one reason, and mm-hmm. Aubrey feels it's for another reason, and maybe Harry felt it was for a third reason.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, one person's pushed as another person's run. And, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I think has always been true about Hope's work is that it's she's not afraid to not give a clear answer about motivation in a way that, you know, that doesn't feel like it's a cop out. Sometimes people can do that. They'll not answer a question to make themselves feel smart compared to the audience, right? By, mm-hmm. Well, I'm just not going to tell you because it's up to you. I get this excuse a lot from students who are working on things and haven't thought things through. I think this is all deeply thought through. This story is, and these characters are that the Hope's created, but there are times when motivation is something the movie seems to be saying that we can't always get at motivation. We can't always get to the maybe the full truth of emotional truth of motivation. It's just messy. It's all messy, mm-hmm. which is, I think, kind of part of its power.
And I felt like it was giving us the space to find, either identify with someone or find sympathy or empathy for them, in that filling in those little, you know, pieces, like you say, are well thought through, but it gave me room to, I'm going to say, pick a side,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, mm-hmm. or switch sides or whatever. And, you know, on my side, she was pushed away.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. I've seen some interviews with Hope and read them where she's talked about when she, you know, was first working on the story, she identified and empathized very naturally with Clover. And then especially as she became a parent and was sort of working deeper into the story, she had to sort of tackle Aubrey in a more empathetic way, the father figure. And this is a tough character. Mm-hmm. I mean, in all kinds of ways, a tough character to write, tough character to play, tough character to live with, I'm sure, you know, in the world of the story. And I think that it's you're right on the money that the movie also seems to shift its sort of allegiances, not quite the right word, but leans into point of view in interesting ways. While keeping with Clover, she learns more about what may or may not have gone on in her when she was there as well as when she wasn't there.
Right. I feel like it allowed me to feel her conflict of, oh, wait, should I have been or what?
Mm-hmm.
Who is in? And I mentioned to my co-watcher, Chelsea, at one point, it was just so clear that they were related and had a long story. Because even though they were mad, they were yelling at each other and that, she would heat up lunch.
Right,
or
right.
He went upstairs to look for something and she followed him. And it just seemed so that kind of familial. What's happening right now is a small part of a larger story without them saying, well, we've been through a lot. We don't understand each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Aubrey, though, I want to also shout out that he did an amazing job. I wonder, and I'll ask Hope if she went in and said, I want the most quintessentially British old man I can find. And it reminded me, too, off topic as I get, when they were in interviews about the making of one of my favorite projects, Veronica Mars.
Oh, yes, yes.
That Rob Thomas, not Matchbox 20 Rob Thomas, was saying some of the parts were easier to cast than others. And that, you know, finding an 18-year-old looking, you know, little blonde girl, they had hundreds and hundreds come in, and some were great and some were not. But for, like, the older kind of heavier dude parts, should we say that the flock has been thinned at that point?
Yeah.
And so there was a lot, you know, there was a lot of quality they had to chew on. And so I wonder how many really good Aubreys she saw.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet there were, because it is a great role for him, too, and one that I would assume that both Hope and the actor took very seriously in terms of making him dimensional enough not to just be written off.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, still not a fan, I digress.
Yeah. No, what's neat too is that she infuses the farm or shoots the farm in a way that it mirrors maybe both of them actually. Maybe a visual metaphor for both Clover and Aubrey. But I think of it as Aubrey, where on the outside it feels like, you know, you get there and there's the big house and it's kind of muddy and it's rainy and it's gray and they have to wear these big boots because the mud is the wellies because the boots are the mud is so thick but he's living in this tiny trailer off away from the house and this terrible thing has happened in the house that he's not dealing with, which is his son's. He calls it an accident, and everybody else is calling it a suicide. That there are things he's not dealing with as the place kind of falls apart around him, whereas he's trying to put on this exterior. Because he'll have moments of being very jovial with other characters, or kind of being funnier, and then very dark. You know, he sort of moves back and forth, shifts moods in kind of interesting ways, in ways that seem to be reflected in the space around him.
It's an excellent observation, Tobin.
No, thank you.
As I was watching this, I was reminded a few times of Winter's Bone.
Oh, interesting.
I feel like it's in tone.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, I wasn't sure that's what
I
wanted.
I like the tone there. Tone.
Also, I just kept her responsibility for all of that. I mean, almost to the point of I feel like it. She was responsible for the flood. She wasn't, but it just all is coming back on her in a way that I felt a little bit similar to the Jennifer Lawrence character. And while the quest is different, I think Clover's quest was to figure out what happened, whether that's something that can be done and there is clear truth to or not. That was her. So she didn't have to go far and wide in the same way. It takes place all on these grounds. But it felt like those two characters had some parallels, and I appreciated in a similar way that I appreciated the, you know, rural America, if you will, rural United States is what I want to say, and that those stories are not as often told or told with complexity. I wondered if that was a motivation here, too, that there are very specific things about the aftermath of the flooding and badgers, something badgers, I don't know about.
Yeah.
And
it's illegal to shoot badgers?
Right, but the badgers can give the cows the TB.
Oh, is that what happens? Is that why they're shooting the badgers?
That's why I believe they shot the badgers.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking it was some kind of arcane laws about animal protection and no guns and all that.
Oh, look.
Like, I thought it was like, no, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right.
We could look it up. We'll have a researcher check that out before we post this. But so there were just elements that felt Winter's Bony to me in a way that I, while the other film was more familiar in those landscapes and things, I wonder, you know, for people who were, you know, are city folk that, oh, that's a whole new world for them. Was it like this? Because this was a bit of a new world for me. I think of more often countryside stories that I've seen are period pieces. So I love that it's contemporary, but rural. And how does that all work? Because it's contemporary, but the guns are old.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everything is old.
Right.
So but badgers.
Yeah. No, and I think I hadn't connected to Winter's Bone, but you're so right. In addition to also the way it looks, both movies are gorgeous movies, but very gray. And your word austere comes to mind again, and very gloomy is not quite. Again, I don't want to make the movie sound not good. Because I think it's very
good. High quality.
Very, very good. But it's high quality gloom. This is a dark story with it's a dark material, and I think that it's but captured beautifully, and I think that there's and also the way Hope is very interested in, it seems like, in this movie with a kind of dramatic realism. It's not just pure fly on the wall, we're just sort of hovering there as the movie is taking place. Like, things will happen in within the filmmaking itself that sort of break from a strict documentary style realism in ways that feel very elegant, that in the same way that happens in Winter's Bone, where the thing we talked about with the cows actually at the auction in Winter's Bone, or with the squirrels and where she's having her sort of fever dream in that movie after she's had the pills, that there's some similar qualities in this movie, and in a way that seems to capture both the sort of physical reality of living in this place and the kind of grit and mud and grime of the day-to-day living, as well as the sort of psychological dimension, which, you have to capture in ways that aren't as literal.
Well said. So a couple of those non-strictly follow the narrative moments are recurring visions of rabbits in water. Now, I was watching it with another animal lover who, we were trying to figure out if it was a rabbit at first or if it wasn't, because we've not seen rabbits underwater.
Right.
So that's a thing. And I want to talk about the rabbits. Okay. But then the other part, just because you mentioned it, that I loved and was, it's hard to pick the saddest moment, right? What is the saddest moment?
Yes.
But when you follow Clover walking through an orchard and she picks the apple and she's going toward these two horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I, I thought to myself, oh, damn, this isn't real. Right. And then it sort of circles back to her in this cold, gloomy place. And so what, whether that is a dream or that is something a way it used to be. Like, I wasn't clear if that was a vision of the past or a vision of an imagined future, or the daydreamings of an assistant veterinarian, but it was just beautiful and just as a demonstration of what might be, but what is not. But without any words. It wasn't a dream sequence. It wasn't a fantasy,
Yeah.
But it was just hurt.
Yeah. Did you want to say something else about the rabbits? You put a pin in the rabbits.
I just didn't want to, blow over the rabbits. I didn't know, Tobin, what are your thoughts on the rabbits?
I guess sort of to echo what you're saying, I had the same experience of not knowing what it was at first, and I also began to wonder how they got those shots, because you're underwater, we are under murky water watching rabbits, and it connects to the flood in some way, it feels like, narratively, but it's not, you know, it's not a, again, this isn't realism. This is something much more elegant. And I'm so curious to talk to Hope about this, because it is not an image. Sometimes movies will have those sorts of images and will then explain them. Mm-hmm. Will then you will see, you know, something happened. It connects directly to the plot. And this never does. This remains a sort of visual motif as opposed to something narrative. And she did say in one interview I was reading, she talked about wanting to make sure that the movie didn't feel like television. That often drama, the danger of sort of straight drama on film is that it can feel like television. And so how do you use your filmmaking tools in order to sort of distinguish, to make it cinematic and not just, and that felt like that to me. That felt like a choice that is motivated in part by how do we get sort of under the skin of this story in a way that is maybe a little bit more tactile, a little more visually and psychologically interesting. But I'm curious where it came from her and how she executed it.
So again, stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned.
We will talk to Hope. We will uncover the mysteries of the rabbits. Lenny over here is going to ask her about the rabbits.
This episode is a big tease for that episode with Hope.
Really, yes. Really, it's just a long preamble.
It also gives everybody time to watch this movie. Can I circle back to the score? You mentioned the score.
Yes.
The other thing I like about the score, in addition to the as you said, the places it's used, is it's odd. It's tonally odd. It's not, very often it's not what you expect. I love it when a score does that. When a score uses either instrumentation or melodies or things that are a little dissonant to the images that we're seeing. And there's, again, that section in the middle of the movie that starts as she's cleaning the bathroom, when she goes in to clean the bathroom where her brother had died. And this is there's a very unusual music cue that starts there that I think is elevates it beyond a sort of, as maybe she would say in that interview, as a television piece or a sort of just looking at what happened that takes it to that psychological dimension. But that, I think the score is remarkable in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think it added to the discomfort that I felt as a watcher. Again, not a criticism, but also of Clover in this place. It's not, nothing about this is comfortable. Nothing about this is going home.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing feels like
that was
home.
That was a chair.
Yep, was chair.
Sorry, go ahead. No, you were saying, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
You know, you could imagine going home for a tragedy and there being comfort and warmth and you know, hugs and nostalgia and just none of that. They got to milk the cows. They're living in the trailer. The house is a mess on all different levels, of course, the you know, scene of the suicide, but also the house has been a mess since the flood. So things are, you know, upended and in wrong places. And then later she explores further in the house and finds gasoline cans, evidence of a different plan, a different plot. And so just there's nothing comfortable. And speaking of the cows and the mud, that there's several just heartbreaking moments that are so small and beautiful, but heartbreaking. And one big one for me was she needs to go help milk the cows. She didn't bring her boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she has to put on his boots.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Her brother's boots,
pardon me.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, that was very hard. She had to put it on. And then she put on the coat with more, you know, then it was resigned and okay. And so she puts on the, you know, the whole thing. And there are a few moments like that where she is handed things or has to take on things that were his that are just so sad. It's so sad. It's a sad movie.
It is a sad movie.
It's a good movie, but it's a sad movie.
It's a movie about grief, and it's a movie that takes grief seriously, and that you know, is makes grief. She has talked in other interviews, because this is not the first movie she's made about grief. She's made some shorts about grief as well, and talk about how in a short you can have a grief can be a static thing, and in a feature film it's hard for grief to be static. Grief has to sort of move into something else, or move through some phases, and that's painful. It's painful, and part of it is because the filmmaking is so good, and the story and the script is so strong, and that central performance. She's taking you with her through all these different phases. We talk about the different times that she's almost crying or hovering on the edge of tears or actually crying, and they all feel a little bit different. They don't feel like the same kinds of tears each time. It feels like she's moving through different stages. As you say, she's put on these boots, or she's having to clean up his blood, or she's discovering things about him, and then we'll move into anger in some ways. Like, and it's not as clean as the sort of the stages of grief. You know, like it's much messier in the way that feels like real grief is, and that's a hard thing to capture and hard thing to watch. Mm-hmm. We're on a run of some movies that are not necessarily easy watches here.
Well, Ocean's 8.
Oh, that's true.
I got through pretty yes. effectively.
Oh my gosh, I forgot that movie evaporates in a way that this movie doesn't, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
Which is, yeah, I don't think it has to do necessarily with it being light as much as it with the sort of, because light movies can stick with you too, but that one has evaporated for me.
It has an effervescence that the leveling was not going for.
Yes, exactly, that. Yeah.
Other aspects of this performance lead us to, let us talk about gender in this movie.
Excellent.
And how many people I wanted to punch in the face.
Yes, okay.
As
was one of them me for making you watch this
movie? No, not this one. But this is my opportunity because we're in the same room.
Yes.
I think as a professional woman, if you will.
Yes.
And as a sister, and in particular a little sister,
yes,
many moments in this when she is not either not taken seriously or not given credit for her expertise, or so it seems. So you know, in the first milking cow scene, the Aubrey is constantly picking at how she's doing it, or do this, do that. And it's something that I felt clearly she had done thousands of times at home.
Right.
And now does or has these skills professionally.
Right. Yes.
But you get home.
Yes.
And you revert to what your patterns and the expectations. And I don't know enough to know, was she doing it well or not? You know, in that moment, did she need assistance, or was he just...
Right.
That way.
Right.
Several times she's out of a conversation or taken out of a conversation. You know, later in the film, someone says, who's in charge here? just there's a lot of times that she's not given that I was screaming for her. But she knows these things. This is hers, too. And just because she did not inherit the farm to me doesn't mean it's not in her blood and in her soul. And it's not, you know, because clearly she knows these things and has done them so many times.
Yeah.
And in about, I think about the middle, she's having a conversation with Aubrey about selling the herd, and she's asking questions, and he says, don't be stupid. And she at that point stops him. Is like, stop calling me stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
I have this degree and that degree, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and I'm not...
Not stupid. Yeah.
And I was so glad for that. There were a couple of moments I was just so glad for the way that she was written and the way she carried it off. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them of just like, no, like, stop it. That's not what we're doing here.
Yeah.
But that kind of didn't help because it was in the middle, and then it kept going until we get to a point where Aubrey says she was a born farmer.
Right.
And so then to me, it kind of comes flipped it back around to this is all more about not her skills or her knowledge, but about the dynamics between, I would say, the four of them, the mother we've never met, Harry we've never met, and the surviving two, but gender.
Yeah. And the remarkable to make this movie in the end not about as much as it is about what happened to the brother, what did he kill himself? Why did he kill himself? What happened in their past to send her away? What happened with the farm and the cows and the TB and the, all those sort of mysteries that are sort of floating around the movie? The movie ends up being about her and her choices in the past and her choices moving forward. And that's a hard thing to do as opposed to just wrapping up a mystery. You know, you could wrap up a mystery much more easily. But to get to this kind of thorny place at the end where she feels some culpability to the... Both, I think, feels like to me the farm and to Harry's death in some kind of way that maybe she shouldn't, that maybe isn't fair, but that she sort of accepts that at some point that in this way, and that there, you know, her relationship with Aubrey feels to me like it's never going to be much different than this. It feels like it's that they're gonna maybe the more she stands up for herself, and goes face to face as opposed to sort of being chased away, that they'll come to some kind of, you know, we do learn over the course of the movie that he cares much more for her and thinks much more highly of her than he ever says to her face.
Mm-hmm.
We learn from that's the neighbor woman, I think.
Yeah, Helen.
Who says that, oh, he told me to call you. She thought that, Clover thought that the neighbor woman called her to let her know that Harry had died. But instead it was that Aubrey had wanted her to call, but he couldn't bring himself to do it himself. And, you know, what a tough, like, what a asshole.
I mean, to me it changed it, but it doesn't make it better.
No, exactly. No.
In the same way that we learned that Harry wanted to call.
Yes, yes.
And Aubrey wouldn't let him.
Right, right.
And right. So, yes, I would hope that that in the time that passes after we finish this part of the story, we see that she comes to a sense of peace about it and does not take it on in the way that clearly Aubrey has taken crap on.
Yes, yes.
And it has internalized and then comes out as garbage behavior.
Right, right.
So I would hope that they're after their... Because they do have to. There's the release at the end because they're both finally emotional together, and we hadn't seen that before,
right?
And that felt real and like something that we had been building toward needed to happen. I hope in the aftermath of that, then they can move forward. Although I was poor neighbor lady Helen who brings her the dress, and then she's out in the mud and the rain. Like, oh goodness,
yeah,
your one dress.
Yeah, you know, it's also. We don't. This is also a movie about sort of grief and about returning home for someone's death. We never see the funeral. We see the prep for the funeral. We see flowers. We see the dresses. We see all of the stuff. But we don't actually. You know, you don't. The movie avoids the cliches of coming home for the funeral movies in ways that maybe only I know because I watch a lot of those movies but it doesn't sort of hit the Stations of the Cross in that way, in ways that feel more, again, more real and more true in some way. Aubrey's a tough these are tough characters. These are in all aspects, and you know, in every meaning of that of that phrase, I think.
Can I tell you about the other time that I loved Clover so much?
Yes, tell me.
Was, and I forget when in the cow process it was. I think it's post-shooting the cow, but I'm not sure.
She has to shoot a cow.
She has to shoot a calf.
She delivers a calf.
And then shoots it.
And then has to kill it.
It just...
Beautifully handled. Visually.
And I what I will say is, I'm sure Tobin is right about that, I did just skip ahead 2 minutes.
Oh, no!
But... She calls for Harry's friend James, who's been helping at the farm, and explains to her that the flood ruined everything and they're broke and they haven't paid anyone in a long time. And she's has a torch and she's walking into the house asking James questions. And says, but she's tricking him into telling her why there's gasoline in the house because Aubrey won't. I don't know if he sincerely didn't know or he's just not.
Right.
He's not available for that conversation.
Right.
And but instead of, because she's tried to ask questions and no one will take her seriously and answer her questions. Yeah. So I love that she's like, okay, I'm going to bring the fire into the house.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we will sort this out. But
he's like, oh, no fire around the gasoline, but not to be able to say that.
But so that then does lead to the unraveling of some of the specifics of that, of the night of the party, right? Because Harry died at a party they had to celebrate him inheriting the farm. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and we see images of that are the first images we see in the whole thing, that it was wild and.
Like very wild.
Well, seems. Like naked wild.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Hope about that too. But, James, the Harry's best friend, you know, finally lays out the story of what happened. But I feel like Clover laid a nice little trap for him to get there. So that was the other moment that I thought she was great. And then just one more. I mean, they're all great performances, but that James performance, especially in that scene, was so nice. Yeah. And there was, I love the way that it was lit by the torch. And it I think it added to the intensity, but then also it was strangely one of the warmest.
Right.
Because of that light, and Clover was emotional and James was emotional, but it was so it felt different and like, oh, here's the, you know, the truth, which I'm putting in quotes. Yeah, Tobin can see.
I see air quotes. Yeah.
Because, you know, there's, like Tobin said, that we're not necessarily ever going to know exactly what the motivations are and what happened and that, but at least James' version of it. And I thought that was a fantastic scene. Just top to bots.
How hard do you think it must have been to make this movie with all that mud? You've been on shoots. Can you imagine all this mud with all this equipment and all this?
I can't. I would only, I guess I assume that there were more people around than on
shoots
that I've been on.
Yes.
We have a crowd, but like.
Yeah.
And that maybe because there many of them are from there, they would be used to it in the way that we were used to rattlesnake territory in Eastern Montana.
Yeah.
But that's a good question. Yeah, it was very. And then the cows. I don't want to waste all the cow talk right now without Hope here.
Yeah.
But wrangling large animals.
Yeah.
And the dog, who was amazing.
Yeah, great dog.
Very British dog.
Yeah.
Just quintessential.
God, there was something I just was in the... yes, I remember now. Back to what you were saying about the gender dynamics in the movie. I would be curious to hear Hope's thoughts, but I also want to ask you it felt to me like the... I don't know exactly how to say this. This isn't a movie that presents itself as about a woman coming into this man's quote unquote world in some way. Like, how do I say this? This doesn't feel like a movie that's wearing that out on its sleeve, but it infuses every scene that it's in. Like, it feels like it's like between text and subtext. Does that make sense? Like it's in every moment in the thing.
It is in every moment.
But they
absolutely.
She never brings it up. He never brings it up. It's not, no one says, because I'm a woman, you didn't let me do these things.
Right.
And yet that's so clearly
it.
The reason, right? I mean,
yes.
It's canny that way is what I'm saying. Or no, you disagree.
Yes. No, I'm just smiling at Tobin.
I can't always see you smile.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think what it's showing, what it beautifully shows to you, is that that is very much the reality.
Right.
So for me, immediately,
Right.
She's in a car with an older man who tells her this thing. And then she's like, she's surrounded by these dudes who know this work very well. But she does, too.
Right.
And the only woman we see is the neighbor lady who helps her with and wants her to look at the flowers.
Flowers and dresses.
Yep. And the food and cleaning up. Mm-hmm. And,
no, you're right.
And doing all that care work.
You're right.
And so, yes, you are right. But I don't interpret that as it's not wearing it on its sleeve. It's not something. I guess it's the phrasing. I don't.
Yeah.
It's not, it is the sleeve. It's not, that is 100% how the world works.
Yeah, no, I see. I guess what I'm saying is that my experience as a man watching this movie is that it takes me longer to see that because of my
privilege. Yes.
Privilege and my experience and that these are things that I am, you know, in the process of ongoing trying to train myself to see in these ways that, because of my lived experience, aren't immediately apparent to me. And so, because this part of gets to why we do this, why I'm interested in doing this whole podcast with you, not just because you're really fun.
Thanks.
And we get to talk about movies together, but also because I want to recognize these things sooner.
That's fantastic. And I think this Hope's contribution here is a great opportunity for that listening and observing that's important. I think you're right. It could have been, and no offense to this network if they're interested in working with us in the future, a Hallmark movie about a British woman who's taking on the, you know, like, could have been framed that way.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And those stories need to be told as well.
Right.
But this goes back to just being so
true
and grounded in the reality of, I don't think if you talked to Clove or Aubrey, they would say anything because I'm a girl.
Mm-hmm.
As a vaguely intelligent vegetarian woman, I felt I understood the struggle.
No, totally. I you know what, the movie that's reminding me a little bit of then that way is Silence of the Lambs, which every scene, when we haven't talked about that movie yet, we're going to someday, but every scene in that movie she's surrounded by, and very often he puts her, puts Clarice Starling with these very tall men in these black suits. There's this great shot in the elevator where she's in her trainee uniform and she looks just shrimpy, and she's always in these rooms with these men, and it very rarely in the movie is that literally commented on by people in the scene, although it is sometimes, but it's always there. Mm-hmm. It's in the sort of the way it's shot, the way that they're staged, the way that they move through space, the way that the way they're costumed, like, and every ass, it sort of suffuses the whole thing. Yes, go ahead. Aislinn raised her hand.
But I want you to finish.
No, I'm not. That's
okay.
Fine.
Sorry. While you were, I think that's a similar. I like that parallel.
Yeah.
But while you were thinking that, I realized something very important.
Oh wow! Tell me.
The universe has come full circle because I think.
Yeah.
The leveling.
Yeah.
Is the exact opposite of She's the Man.
Ooh, okay. Loop this circle for us.
One is campy and bright.
Yep.
And wants to tell us it is about gender.
Uh-huh.
And wants to, that's, you know, and then.
Our mom just walked in.
Hi, Mom.
She wants her phone. She doesn't want to say anything. I don't see her phone. I see my phone.
Where the leveling is about gender in many ways, or as you know, like you say, it's infused in every aspect of this story in some way. It's not discussed. It's between those layers of text and subtext. Where the other one is slapping you in the face.
Right. Here's my text. Slap.
Yes,
slap. Yeah.
with binding implements. and you then just, you know, I mean, is Channing the anti-Clover? I don't know, but I think the leveling is the anti-She's the Man, or the opposite. And I appreciate them both very much, but that just...
I love
they're just opposites, and I wonder how often we're going to be able to do that.
I was going to say, we may have to... finish the whole podcast now, because you've just, that's the unified theory of of the contenders here. these two poles. Yeah, that's good. I'm impressed.
That's the closest to a game we're going to get here, folks, because we're saving the game portion for our guest, Hope Dixon Leach.
Yay. So Hope can now prepare.
Yes.
she doesn't know this yet.
There's a game coming for ya. And I hope she's not offended by leveling being the anti- She's the Man.
The opposite ends of the mirror.
The doppelganger.
The doppelganger. Yes, yes, yes. No, I think that would be fair. So speaking of, now's the time in the podcast where we talk about whether the films that we see are progressive or regressive. Is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Aislinn, what say you?
Well.
There's a lot of suspense here.
Let's try it again. Of course, this is a step forward. I think as we just we're saying, you know, it could have been a, when we're talking about the gender play in it, it could have been on the nose about those things, but it was about grief and it was about family and it was about loss and it was about self. And of course, gender is all the way through that. And it didn't have to tell us that. Some stories should tell us that. And I'm not saying, you know, they're less than for that. But in this one, I think it was, it just flowed through it like a rabbit through water.
And well done.
I love Hope. I was settling in, I'll be super honest, in the first 10 seconds of this movie. So I knew she had directed it, but I had forgotten, apologies, Hope, that she had written it too until the end credits. Mm. And so then I was just like, well, fuck. Like, we all have to go find other jobs now because Hope is here and Hope has delivered.
Yeah, yeah.
Tobin?
I agree completely. This is a big step forward, and I can't wait to see what Hope does next and to see her sort of tackle other stories and get more resources to make bigger stories as she wants to tell. And I think that also that as we've talked about, that central performance, Ellie Kendrick is so, so, so good in this movie. And I hope she finds other roles that are as tofu-y as this one is and gets to the hope that this leads to other things for her as well. And maybe they'll work together again sometime.
And if there's cows involved, you could always invite Aislinn.
And you've got Aislinn if you need the cows. Aislinn, what are we going to talk about next?
That is an excellent question. Next up, in 2 weeks, we will talk about Laggies. On July 24th, that episode will drop. That's a Lynn Shelton starring that woman whose name I can't remember.
Keira Knightley.
And I'm going to stop talking now.
Okay. I love this, though.
But I love Lynn Shelton. So I'm excited to talk about that movie. I think we'll see. I don't know that it's clear.
I've never seen it. This will be my first time.
Excellent.
Yeah. I like Lynn Shelton as well, though, but this is not one I've ever seen. This felt like maybe more mainstreamy, maybe because Keira Knightley was in it, or sort of.
And that guy, the guy who dances.
Guy who dances.
Moon.
Oh, Sam Rockwell?
Sam Rockwell is in it.
Fun.
Who I have a weird crush on. We can talk about that.
Oh, good. This will be fun. And somewhere in the next few weeks, we'll have our interview with Hope, and that will come as well. We're not sure exactly what day that's going to come out, but watch for that. It will be a bonus episode, not one of our regularly scheduled episodes, so it'll drop sort of as a surprise. So keep an eye out for that. And you can keep an eye out for that by following us on our various social media. Although I've been taking a break, I don't know if you've noticed that.
I did. You announced it.
Well, I felt like I had to because there are people on Twitter, people who enjoy our show, who like to interact, and whose shows I enjoy that I interact with. So I felt like I had to let people know.
We're on vacation, people.
Yeah, that was part of it.
And I'm just negligent. Tobin's on vacation, and I don't care. But Tobin, where can they find you to anticipate your return?
My triumphant return. They can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington. Aislinn, where can they find you?
You can find me at SassyNerdMT on Twitter. You can find bios about the both of us at cageclub.me.
Yeah, and some great artwork, too.
Mm-hmm. Great artwork.
Yeah.
You can find us at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at contenders_pod. Come say hi. We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows, including Too Fast, Too Forever, in which we will be guests on the first episode of the second lap.
Yeah.
I was trying to get episode and lap.
Okay, sorry.
We're very excited. Love Me That Fast, That Furious. So check that one out.
My favorite franchise.
Check that out. Check out all the great shows, and you can catch up with them, keep up with them on Twitter at Cage Club Pod.
If you like our show, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't like our show, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. We love to read those comments. They make us feel good. They help us spread the word about the show. And if you leave us a really good one, we might just read it on an upcoming show if we like what we see. We appreciate you listening for our podcast. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
We really appreciate you. I wrote here watching.
You did write watching.
We really appreciate you listening to us yammer on about these movies. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aizen Addington. And we'll see you next time on The Contenders. We have to do that part again anyway. Because I wanted to say we're about to be on the... Too Fast, Too Forever?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so where should we do that?
All the great shows?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So do you want to...